The Philadelphia Folk Festival proudly supports WHYY. This year's festival presents Lyle Lovett and his large band, Arlo Guthrie performing the 50th anniversary of Alice's Restaurant, Shaky Graves, North Mississippi All-Stars, Bruce Coburn, Tom Paxton, and many more. For a weekend of concerts, crafts, kids' activities, and camping, it's the Philadelphia Folk Festival, August 13th through 16th on the Old Pool Farm in Upper Salford. For tickets and information, 800-556-FOLK or pfs.org.
Pennsylvania's top law enforcement official, Attorney General Kathleen Kane, faces criminal charges and calls for her resignation. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. Kane says she's staying put and plans to prove her innocence. WHYY's Dave Davies reports on the charges announced today by Montgomery County District Attorney Risa Vetri Furman.
This is a sad day for the citizens of Pennsylvania, and it's a sad day for all of us in law enforcement.
Sad, but not exactly unexpected. Kathleen Kane's been mired in controversy for more than a year, and the allegations that led to criminal charges became public in April when a grand jury report recommended charges against her. Kane's accused of abusing her office for political benefit and treating confidential investigative material as fodder to embarrass someone in a public relations battle. It goes back to a March 2014 Philadelphia Inquirer story about a corruption investigation Kane chose not to pursue. DA Risa Vetri Furman says Kane was embarrassed by the story and decided to do something about it.
To secretly leak confidential investigative information and secret grand jury materials directly to political operatives in the hopes of embarrassing and harming former state prosecutors whom she believed, without evidence, had made her look bad.
Authorities say Kane reached back to another five-year-old investigation conducted by the prosecutor she was mad at and leaked information suggesting they'd failed to aggressively pursue a corruption case. The charging documents name the political operative that got a packet from Kane's office, Joshua Morrow, and the reporter he delivered it to, Chris Brennan of the Daily News. Furman says the evidence shows Kane was directly involved in the leak, and when a grand jury was called to look into it,
she lied repeatedly about her own actions, about the law, and about other matters simply to support her version of events.
So Kane is charged with conspiracy, obstructing the administration of law, perjury, and other offenses. Kane released a brief statement saying only that she's innocent and will stay in office and fight the charges. But earlier this year, Lanny Davis, a Washington attorney and self-described crisis manager who served as special counsel to President Clinton, made a more aggressive and specific case to reporters on Kane's behalf. He said Kane was being railroaded in the investigation.
This railroad train seems to me to be driven by some men with grudges, men who are bitter and angry at being exposed and professionally embarrassed.
Davis didn't name the men, but noted that Kane is the first woman and first Democrat elected to her post, and that the judge who appointed a special prosecutor to look into the leak and the prosecutor himself are both Republican men. Davis says Kane did okay the release of one document to a reporter, but he said it was not covered by confidentiality laws. He says she knows nothing about a second document the reporter received and reported on in the same story. The DA says the investigation shows she's wrong on both counts. Kane is the second statewide Democratic official in Pennsylvania to be charged with a crime this year. State Treasurer Rob McCord resigned in January after facing federal corruption charges. When asked if Kane should resign, Mayor Michael Nutter said every public official in a jam has to make his or her own decision, but he noted that the stakes are different for a ranking official in law enforcement.
There is an even greater need for the Attorney General to seriously contemplate her ability to represent the citizens of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania under these circumstances. I believe that public confidence is more important than personal position.
Governor Tom Wolf has called for Kane to step down. The lack of political support within her own party is striking, since Kane was seen as a rising star when she was elected in 2012. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Center City, Philadelphia business owners still have plenty of questions about how traffic restrictions for the Pope's late September visit will affect their staff and customers. Among them, whether taxis will be able to operate inside the security zone. WHYY's Bill Hangley reports.
The man they call the unofficial mayor of Philadelphia's pub scene says his Pope planning is well underway.
Oh, I have my order already. It's a very simple order. It's 5 loaves, 2 fishes, a few jugs of water, and 2 miracles.
That's Fergus Carey, also known as Fergie, owner of a handful of bars in Center City and Fairmount. While there's a lot he doesn't know about the big papal weekend, Fergie's making plans for his staff and his supplies.
We're going to run a hostel in my house. I'm going to put a teepee out in the back deck so people will be able to stay with me if they need to and then get across. And I was also wondering about if I would be able to get deliveries to my house and then walk them across and leave a car inside or a cart inside the fence. We'll work it out.
Fergie says with the multitudes coming to town, there's a good chance he'll do good business. But others aren't so sure. Ron Blunt of the Taxi Drivers Alliance of Pennsylvania says drivers need to know as soon as possible whether taxis will be allowed inside the papal security zone. Blunt says waiting for answers has been frustrating.
People like the parking authority, I'm sure like the streets department, all of them are in the loop. But small businesses like taxi cabs, restaurants, hotels, we're out of the loop. And we're what makes the city run.
Blunt hopes to get the final word soon so his drivers can make other plans if necessary. The Secret Service says a complete security plan will be ready 3 weeks before the Pope's visit. For WHYY News, I'm Bill Hangley.
Today marks the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. Though it removed many of the hurdles minority citizens faced at the ballot box, commentator Solomon Jones now fears a self-imposed disenfranchisement brought on by apathy.
I want to be proud on this, the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, but I can't. Not while I'm mourning the untimely demise of all that the Voting Rights Act represents. I mourn because just 27% of eligible voters participated in Philadelphia's mayoral primaries. I mourn because we've been lulled into believing that the struggle for the vote is over. I mourn, most of all, because these sad truths have emerged as a result of our apathy. It wasn't always this way. When discriminatory practices like poll taxes and literacy tests were used as state-sanctioned tools to keep us from voting, we fought, bled, and died to gain that basic right. Under the Voting Rights Act, we achieved it. Black voter registration and turnout soared. So did the number of black officials, culminating in the 2008 election of the nation's first black president. But in the 2013 Supreme Court decision that declared a key provision of the Voting Rights Act unconstitutional, Chief Justice John Roberts said the Voting Rights Act had done its job and federal oversight was no longer needed. However, when the law was changed, new discriminatory practices replaced those that Roberts claimed had been eradicated. Instead of poll taxes, states like Texas and North Carolina instituted restrictive voter ID laws, laws that disproportionately affected blacks, Latinos, and those living in poverty. And while I appreciate that a federal appeals panel recently ruled that the Texas voter ID law was discriminatory and violated the Voting Rights Act, it's not just the law that disenfranchises us. Far too many of us disenfranchise ourselves. When we don't participate in the electoral system because we believe that our vote changes nothing, we disrespect those who shed their blood on the Edmund Pettus Bridge while marching through Selma for the vote. When we don't participate in the electoral system because we believe that a moment in the voting booth is an inconvenience to be avoided, we forget the sacrifice of those who died for that fundamental right. But more than remembering the past, our duty to vote is about preserving the future. Because when we don't vote, we deny our children their legacy. We tell them that black lives don't matter. It's not enough for the black community to denounce the national problem of police abuse against people of color. It's not enough for us to fight against the lack of funding for public school systems across the nation. It's not enough for us to speak against Confederate symbols that even now remain on government property. If we don't vote, our voices are muted and our cries are in vain. If we are to truly celebrate the anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, then we must do so with one simple action, vote. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog at newsworks.org. Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf has found another spot in his administration for Marcus Brown. His nomination to lead the Pennsylvania State Police was rejected by the state Senate. The governor says he's appointing Brown as the state's Homeland Security Director, a post that's been vacant since Wolf took office in January. The appointment does not require Senate confirmation. Legal advocacy groups are suing Delaware prison officials, alleging they unconstitutionally subject mentally ill prisoners to solitary confinement without proper evaluation and treatment. The American Civil Liberties Union and Community Legal Aid Society filed a complaint in federal court today, claiming that solitary confinement can exacerbate symptoms of mentally ill inmates' disorders, and it violates their constitutional rights. Prison officials say they've worked with the two groups for several months to address issues involving inmates with serious mental illness, and they say they're disappointed by the filing of the suit. Officials also note that they supported the legislature's passage of a resolution this year calling for a study of restrictive housing practices in prisons, this amid growing concern about the effects of solitary confinement on mental health and reentry. 84 degrees, cloudy skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. We're coming into an unsettled period. There's a 50% chance of showers tonight, overnight, and through the day tomorrow. Tonight's low 66 degrees, Friday's high 82. To the weekend, Saturday, partly sunny, high in the mid-80s. Sunday, plenty of sunshine, high again in the mid-80s. And Monday, partly sunny with a chance of a stray shower, high around 86. Still ahead. The calendar still says summer, but Philadelphia school principals begin bracing themselves for the coming school year.
We're going to cry for a moment, but we're going to dust ourselves off and help the kids learn more this year.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital supports WHYY. With a hospital dedicated just to neuroscience, Jefferson treats complex disorders of the brain and spine with advanced technologies and research. A multidisciplinary team of specialists devises individual treatment plans for patients with everything from aneurysm to epilepsy. For more information, 1-800-JEFF-NOW or jefferson.edu. Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, 1-800-JEFF-NOW or jefferson.edu.
Hey, what's up? I'm Shad. Malik Jandali is a Syrian composer and pianist who makes music to counter the Assad regime and the effects of ISIS. Next time on Q, he talks about how he thinks music can affect change, even in violent situations. That's coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Next time on The World, elections this weekend in Haiti, and an unusual soundtrack for the campaigns, a raunchy song with a double meaning.
It could mean let my little party stand, or leave my piece alone, as in my piece of the pie, or it could also refer to male genitalia.
More about the song and the singer, and why the candidates love his lyrics. That's next time on The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Last month, WHYY reported that scores on standardized tests in Pennsylvania dropped precipitously as a result of the implementation of more rigorous state tests. Educators across the state are reeling now that they've learned the extent of the declines in their individual schools. WHYY's Kevin McCory offers this look at the anxiety in Philadelphia.
Without context, the declines are staggering.
Oh, Lord Jesus. I mean, it went really, really down.
It's going to be a very difficult conversation.
How far down did the scores go?
a good amount.
That was three Philadelphia elementary school principals who were seeing upwards of a 40 percentage point drop on state tests. Last school year was the first in which the PSSA test, taken in grades 3 through 8, were aligned with Pennsylvania's version of the Common Core state standards. For that reason, state officials say it's misleading to compare student proficiency rates with prior years. Despite this advisory, principals and administrators are bracing for how the news will affect parents, students, and teachers.
My concern is really messaging it to my teachers because my teachers worked so hard last year. They worked really, really hard.
Ann Brown is principal of Nebinger Elementary in South Philadelphia, which saw a 40 percentage point drop in math and a 20 percentage point decline in English language arts.
We were bracing ourselves to, we knew it was going to go down, but we didn't know by how much.
Logan Elementary School principal Shanika Sanders-Thomas says her school's proficiency in math dropped from 50% to 16%.
We're going to cry for a moment, but we're going to dust ourselves off and help the kids learn more this year.
Across the state, proficiency rates are especially low in 7th and 8th grade math. Based on preliminary results, the state expects only 30% of 8th graders will be considered proficient. Many districts and charter schools have started sending letters to parents and teachers explaining the reason for the declines. John Swoyer, CEO of Mast Charter School in far northeast Philadelphia, wrote to parents this week.
And we ultimately just think it's going to give our parents a peace of mind that, you know, do look at the scores and worry that their child's not getting the same education that they had in the past.
The Philadelphia School District will also send out a letter this week. Superintendent William Height stresses that the declines do not reflect poorly on the district and merely mirror the statewide trend.
What I said to the principals, look, everybody just calm down, right? Let's calm down first. This is not a surprise to anyone because these are different standards that are more rigorous, and it's the first time.
Height said the district's PSSA math scores actually fell less sharply than the state average. Height also says the district will figure out a way to prevent declining scores from hurting students' chances of being accepted into magnet schools. For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCrory.
You know that bumpy road you always drive on? Well, before it can get fixed, someone in municipal government has to know it's there. An inspector has to evaluate the street and put what's found into a computer system determining how soon the road needs attention. It can be a time-consuming and inefficient process. But as Keystone Crossroads' Irina Jarove reports, new technology could eventually change that.
Christoph Mertz spends his days looking at cracks in the street.
You know, once you're involved in something like this, you see every crack in the road, every pothole, and said, this is interesting.
He's not an inspector. He's a researcher at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, and he's built a computer program that uses photos to detect cracks in pavement. Pittsburgh is helping Mertz test the technology. He's placed cameras inside three city vehicles. The holders are similar to GPS mounts and sit on the windshield. He's got a camera mounted in his own car, too, and takes me for a ride.
Okay, so let me get that app started, and then you just hit the start recording.
As he drives, the camera records the pavement unspooling in front of the car and saves it. Later, he'll upload the video to his computer and let his algorithms analyze the data. The program breaks the pavement in each picture into a grid.
It looks for texture. It looks for certain patterns. So a newly paved road looks basically uniformly black. But the cracks, it will have a texture.
Then it calculates how much of the given surface is covered by cracks and scores the road's condition. The city's inspectors do a similar analysis, but they use their eyes, which can be a problem.
Each inspector is doing a fairly subjective inspection.
That's Deputy Director of Public Works Lee Howler. The other problem? Pittsburgh is responsible for 1,100 miles of streets divided into 17,000 segments. It takes the three part-time inspectors 4 to 5 years to review all of the segments. The city uses a pavement management system and models to predict the street's lifespan, but Howler says at any particular time there's a good chance much of the base data is inaccurate.
After winter, the condition of a given street can change rapidly because what was just cracking after a number of freeze-thaw cycles turns into major potholes.
Howler says having more accurate up-to-date street data would make planning easier and more effective. He'd be able to ask for money and promise specific results, something he can't always do now.
I think when you have the conversations with council and say, these are the extra streets specifically by name that we would be able to do in this upcoming season if we had extra money, it's more tangible.
A better, more predictably maintained road network means a more viable city. Here's American Society of Civil Engineers fellow Brian Leshko.
And that, you know, is not only just the public getting to and from work, which is very important, but it's also bringing goods and services, freight and the like. It really does have a big impact on the economy of a city.
Back at the lab, Mertz is still working out kinks in the program. He pulls up a map of Pittsburgh filled with green, yellow, and red dots, each representing an analyzed image of a street segment. Green means the road is good, yellow means it has some damage, and red means it's bad.
So this one is good. So now you're putting me on the spot.
He clicks on a red dot, which means bad, but the photos show smooth pavement.
Okay, this is called bad, but this actually has shadows. So
overhanging tree branches cast shadows on the pavement. The algorithm still can't tell cracks and branch shadows apart. The next couple of segments are accurate.
And you see red, and it's really bad.
That's really bad, yeah.
Mertz says the machine learning algorithms are still learning. So his technology isn't perfect yet. He also hasn't trained it to see potholes, patches, or rutting. But it could eventually be a game changer for cities like Pittsburgh with aging infrastructure and limited resources. Irina Zhorov, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. Finally this evening, the city of Hoboken has wasted little time in celebrating the centennial of its most famous son. Although Frank Sinatra's birthday isn't until December 12th, it's been a Sinatra summer in the North Jersey city, with several showings of his films as well as tribute concerts. Well, Sinatra Summer wraps up tonight with a free concert by Scanatra. Now, as you might guess from their name, the 11-member band has a mission to pay homage to the chairman of the board by performing ska-styled renditions of Frank Sinatra classics. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Tomorrow, a temporary park furnished with recycled materials in Philadelphia's Kensington neighborhood takes the place of a vacant lot, and neighbors hope it'll be permanent. We'll talk with one of the project's designers on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.
The Fleischer Art Memorial supports WHYY and invites artists of all skill levels to explore their creativity this fall. With a 117-year tradition of making art accessible to all, regardless of ability or background, Fleischer offers over 70 classes and workshops in drawing, painting, photography, sculpture, ceramics, printmaking, and more for artists of all skill levels from throughout the Delaware Valley. Classes are now forming. Registration and tuition information at fleischer.org.